true crime podcast where best friends and next-door neighbors, Willow and Lillian, spill the tea on murder, mysteries, and other things that go bump in the night. So get your favorite teacup ready, and let's get into it.
Welcome to Cruelty Podcast. This is Lillian, and with me is Willow.
Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. How you doing?
Good. It's Dating App Murders Month.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. It is. And we're going to talk about it.
Tonight's case is the Grindr Cannibal.
Oh! Can we pause, though?
Yeah.
Before we get serious?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is a rough case, obviously.
Of course, Grindr, the dating app.
Mm-hmm.
It's predominantly used by gay men.
Mm-hmm.
But the name Grindr with cannibal.
Oh, you're going, yeah, it didn't gay. Go that far. It didn't go that far.
Okay, good, good, yeah. Good. I hope we're not, like, making sausage because no. I'm going to lose it. I just ate
no.
dinner.
No. Although we did cover a Grindr cannibal on Patreon. During the Breaking Bad murders episode,
yes.
It was a 2016 case in the UK from a man named Stefano Breezy.
I remember that.
Yeah. So that was a three-part case, the episode that we did. It was three different cases in one.
Yes, it was really interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, so this case happened in the United States in 2019, a few years later in Michigan. And so trigger
a lot of cases from Michigan.
Yeah.
It's fucky there.
Yeah.
All right. Trigger warning time.
Okay. Trigger warning. BDSM, bondage, mental health conditions, self-harm, eating disorders, mentions of suicidal ideations, descriptions of a corpse, and cannibalism. So one of the underlining tragedies to this case that we honestly don't know is that we honestly don't know how many victims technically.
Is this kind of a serial killer situation?
I don't know. We only know of one person that he actually murdered. We do have two survivors that did call 911.
Okay.
So, but that's all we know. There could have been more. And I think that that really hinges on the social stigmas of gay culture, of BDSM culture, of those types of the dating scene online merging with their personal lives and their careers and their families and kind of, you know, a lot of times whenever you get yourself in situations like that or become members of those types of communities, a lot of times it's isolated communities, if that makes sense.
Yes, yes, it does. And just so y'all don't feel judged or anything,
absolutely.
I am in the BDSM community.
Yeah.
I'm a big old pain slut, so we're all are welcome here. There ain't no kink shaming.
Absolutely. And I just, I think that we say that because we understand.
Yes. That's why I'm saying it, because I don't, because we cover these things. Like, I don't want it to ever be like, oh, you're awful because, and related to cannibals because you're into little kink. No,
absolutely.
No, ma'am.
Absolutely.
No, ma'am. We don't do that here. No. It just so happens these things coincide, and it kind of leads to the shroud, the fog of deception and mystery, because these are isolated communities where people don't like talking to the fucking police.
Right, right,
because
right.
These things used to be illegal.
Right.
So.
Right. And if you have to file reports, then that means that, you know, it gets your name out there. That could do a lot of things to your job. And
to
know,
this very
family,
day, to like, this very
yeah,
day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
So people really like to keep these types of things very hush hush.
On the low.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you also run into situations, especially with dating apps. I know that we're probably going to touch on this a lot this month, but just the idea of before you go anywhere, whether it be on a date or whether it be, you know, just out with friends or whatever, to keep those that are close to you in the know of what's going on. You know, share your location. If you need to have a group chat where you keep people updated with what you're doing that night.
Play safe, my friends.
Play safe. You know, I mean, I know that families can get really judgy, and I know that a lot of families are not really open with these types of discussions, but luckily we are online.
And I get not wanting to tell your dad, hey, on the weekends, I'm a dominatrix at a fetish club.
Right. Right. But you can build inner circles and communities that can...
We all got to keep each other safe.
Exactly.
I mean, whether you're male, female, non-binary, or other, please be safe when you play. That's all.
And, you know, leave those breadcrumbs online.
Leave them.
Let everybody know where you are. If you have to come into our Discord, I know that we talk about that a lot, but there is a safe place in there. If you need to be like, hey, look, this is the guy that I'm going, or this person that I'm going on a date with.
Here's all their information. Here's my location.
Here's my location.
We are more than happy to check on you.
Absolutely.
More than happy.
That's, to me, at this point, as a single woman in her 30s in 2024, it is second nature at this point.
Like, yeah.
I have to do that, and I also have to do that for other people.
Indeed. Like, and
I
we're
want
happy
people to do that for
happy
me.
Happy to.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, luckily, the victim in this case, Kevin Bacon, he did end up at least letting his friends know what was going on, and that was essentially what solved this case.
Kind of like our last case, where the friends solve it. I love that.
And, yeah. So, yeah, there's the two phone calls, the two 911 phone calls that came in. Both victims remained anonymous, and both victims did not press charges. And that really goes back to, like, the societal stigmas that
placed absolutely.
Upon them. And so those 911 calls were recorded, but they were not released until the murder case actually came about. So the first 911 call, I have them linked. I didn't want to, like, insert the audio for this because it is very frantic, very, you know, loud and kind of hard to listen to unless you're ready to listen to it. So I will have it linked below. But the first 911 call was recorded in October of 2019. The first call came in from a man who said that he had come to Detroit from New York on a business trip. When the call comes into dispatch and she asks what his emergency is, the man tells her a quick backstory and then says that he's, quote, walking down the street with a butcher knife, and he says, quote, sweetheart, I need help. You can tell in his voice he's very sweet, he's very kind, and very scared. He asks to she has to clarify that he's walking down the street, and he says, "Yes, ma'am, I am. I'm passing a barn. It's beautiful here." Aww. You can tell he's been crying, and he's, you know, trying to cheer himself up, you know, be grateful of the situation that he's in. You know, and
I don't know why that really breaks.
I know,
heart.
No, it really does. It really
cry.
Does. Well, and then the barn, like, that's, you know, a very prominent landmark for the area. So, yeah, he later on in the phone conversation, you know, he talks about how the moon is full and it's beautiful out here because he's from New York. And
bless his heart.
Yeah, and he ends up, she ends up asking him if he has anything else on him. And he goes, "No, I don't even think I have my cigarettes." And you know, like that moment, he starts breaking down. He's like, "I don't even fucking have my cigarettes on me." Like, he tells her that when he got off the bus stop from New York to Detroit, he met a man and the two had started talking. The caller said that he was bisexual and that he was rather intrigued that this person had started this conversation and that it was going really good. He was really liking the conversation, and the conversation kind of just kept continuing. And so the man offered, you know, if they could keep talking, he didn't have to catch the next bus. Like, let me just give you a ride. So he got into his car. It all seemed really exciting. It seemed to be going well. They stopped for a soda. And then all of a sudden he woke up in the man's basement.
Oh my God. If stories like this just fill me with terror.
Absolutely.
And not just because it's dating. It's just... because how many times have I done this?
Oh, a million. I cannot.
Not even in a romantic capacity.
Yeah, exactly.
How many times?
How many times have I gotten to
a
stranger's car?
Have I just gone to hung out with somebody, or met somebody at a coffee shop and just wanted to go hang out some more?
Yeah.
And I feel at ease and I feel happy, it's going good. Maybe there's a connection here or a friendship.
Well, the truth is that the great majority of us...
It is safe.
Yeah. And the great majority of us, all we want is human connection.
Absolutely.
All we want is friendship and,
or
stories.
Love,
and
or passion.
But that human connection.
Yeah. But not these fucking monsters.
They're looking for a different type of human connection, and it's fucking disgusting.
No, they're looking for prey.
Absolutely.
For prey.
Yeah. And it's like a game to them.
Very much so.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
So he wakes up in this person's basement in the middle of nowhere, naked and chained up. Luckily, he found himself alone with his captor nowhere in sight. The caller was somehow able to reach a kitchen knife, one that was most likely meant to be used on him. He grabbed the knife and he cut himself free from the leather strap around his ankles that was attached to chains on the ground. He had been stripped of all of his belongings, but he was luckily able to find them very close by, including his cell phone, his clothes. And so he grabbed that, and with the butcher knife, he ran out of the house. The man told dispatch that he had the kitchen knife with him just in case the man who had done this to him was after him. He had no idea if he was being chased or not, but he did know that he was lost. He was not from there. He had no idea where he was or where to go. He knew that he had turned around a few times. He knew that he was lost, and he knew that based on the amount of times he had turned around, it was inevitable that he could possibly end up at the same house that he had just left.
That's horror movie shit.
He has no fucking clue where he is. It is nighttime. There is a full moon guiding him, and that is it.
Poor baby.
So he's terrified and he's basically calling police just so he has a ride to safety. He continuously begged the operator to find him, and with little description and a general cell phone ping, she stayed on the phone with him until the cops finally found him. He told her that he didn't want to press charges. He just wanted to go home. He mentioned that he was in Detroit for work as a court advocate for the people of Flint. He was supposed to be in court the next day, but he was too traumatized now. He was so shaken that all he wanted to do was go back home. He said that since that he had blacked out, he didn't remember anything, that he didn't feel like he had any injuries. He didn't want to open a whole new case over this, and he didn't want to ever have to interact with that man ever again. So he just wanted to go home, and he just wanted to be safe.
I always wonder, in cases where the victim does not want to press charges, yet the crime is clearly as horrific as kidnapping and, attempted murder.
Yeah.
Why do we need them to press the fucking charges? Is it because it's his word against...
There were many articles, especially that came out around this time, that were very much pointing those fingers, like saying, hey, why didn't the police do anything? There were two men running away from this house. You couldn't have done something?
And their lack of doing anything just gives him permission and embolden him further.
Right. So he goes on to tell the operator that he wanted to keep the knife for protection until the cops got there, that he'd put it on the ground. He said that he'd throw it in the woods, but the operator was like, please don't do that. We might need that for evidence, so just place it on the ground next to you. But he was like, I have no issues with police. He was like, I advocated for the police. He went on to say that he was very respectful. He was just scared and needed a ride back to the airport, or at least to safety. The cop showed up, and that was basically that. He ended the call with the operator, and the case never opened, and the phone calls weren't released until the murder trial. It's said that after police picked him up, he requested to be dropped off at a gas station not that far from Mark Latinsky's house. And that after he was dropped off at this gas station by the police officers, him and Mark got back in contact with each other. It was stated that he went back to Mark's house and stayed there a few more days before going back to New York City.
Oh, my God.
Now, the second call came in a month later in November of 2019. A man called 911 having just escaped being chained up in a basement by who he describes as, quote, some creepy guy. It was freezing in the middle of the night, and this young man was only wearing a kilt and held a bloody rag over his mouth. He was in distress and clearly needed help. He told dispatch that he had had no idea where he was. He wasn't from there, but they did a cell phone ping, and it looked like, and he was looking for, you know, basically a house nearby, like looking for some sort of address on, you know, a mailbox or something like
right.
that. So you can actually hear while he's on the phone with police, like kind of like going over like what he's looking at, like where he's at. And then you can hear the man pick up speed, begin running. And he says, he's after me. You can hear him knocking on doors, crying and begging them to help him in or help him and let him in. The homeowners answer, but won't give him the address. He continues running. They ask him to describe his surroundings. He says he sees a white house and a barn. He finally finds a house with a homeowner who will answer the door, and they give him the address. And just as he catches his breath, the cops show up, just as Mark shows up as well.
Jesus.
He had, in fact, been chasing after this man.
Oh my God, that makes it so much fucking scarier.
When he showed up, he told police that he just wanted his $300 kilt back.
This motherfucker.
Oh, I like already have chills, and we're not even at the beginning of the story yet. Like, this man, the man who answered the door, later told reporters that this man who had shown up on his porch covered in blood, he said, quote, he's got purple hair, he's wearing a leather skirt, and he's got a couple belts across the chest. This gentleman is grasping my arm with deathly fear, screaming, help me, keep him away from me, and just screaming at the top of his lungs. He wants to hurt me, he wants to hurt me. Another vehicle pulls into my driveway, and out comes who I now find out is Mark, wearing a leather skirt, belts across his chest, no shoes, no shirt, his beard is braided, very odd-looking gentleman, end quote. The man who called 911 talked it over with Mark and the police officers and ended up leaving the scene, never reporting the incident. Now, I have read several articles on this case, and there are varying reports that say that this man that was injured left with the police officers, and the police officers took him to safety. But I have many other reports that say that this man left with Mark. Now, the person at the doorstep said that he left with Mark. So,
that's
either
so
way.
Scary.
Either way. The
yeah.
report was never filed. And I know that many people would see these situations and think that they should have pressed charges. They, you know, that they should have not gone back with him, that they knew that he was a dangerous man and that they were in danger and that they, you know, knew that other people would be endangered too.
Nah, it's not the game we play today.
I cannot do that. No.
We're not doing that.
No.
We don't victim blame. And unless you've been in a similar circumstance.
Yes, I know. I've been in these situations yes. more times than I can count.
Yes. I have been assaulted and I did not call the police because I knew it would be a bunch of bullshit and I was already traumatized.
There was only one of my assailants that ever had charges pressed against them, and it was out of my hands because I was a minor. I did not press those charges. And I say that, like, not with, like, any type of pride or, like, I mean, I held guilt for all of my life, for every single person that has ever harmed or perpetrated me, for not pressing charges on mm-hmm. them, because I have, one by one, watched them go off and hurt other people
yes.
and thought I could have stood in their way. But the thing is, at the end of every night, the blame lays on the perpetrator
solely.
And the perpetrator alone.
Yes. And until the world starts treating people who have been assaulted or hurt in such a way more seriously and dealing with these accusations with the gravitas and respect that it deserves, then we cannot expect victims of such crimes to want to make reports, and anybody who says otherwise can go fuck themselves.
Well, think about it rationally, okay, and objectively.
Yeah, I totally
objectively. Well, I mean, as listeners, you know, the person, the victim in the situation going to police, what would that do? That would give your perpetrator maybe a few months in jail, maybe a couple $1,000s fine.
Or what about the 75% of rape test kits that aren't even tested ever?
Or what about the fact that these people were held captive and hadn't been assaulted yet? Like, the first person possibly wasn't assaulted yet. We don't know.
Well, and also because they're gay men or queer men, then no one cares.
Like, this is so Ted Bundy, it's ridiculous. Or not Ted Bundy, what's the gay one?
Dahmer.
This is so Dahmer. You know how Dahmer was there at the police station and they gave him that child back?
They gave him the child back. And he killed
this
that
is the
child.
Exact type of situation.
Yes, it is. So if y'all want to be mad, we ain't going to be mad at the victims. We're going to be mad at police and the structures put in place to allow this behavior to continue unchecked.
And the That's person who you're mad committing at. The crimes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm even less mad at them. There's something wrong upstairs.
He has very many mental disorders, and we're about to get into it. But yeah, I mean, he definitely was not right in the mind. But he,
I mean, I'm not giving that as an excuse, but I'm just
saying.
He had
many months of planning this. This is well planned out.
But, you know, my issue is with people in power, men in power, and the people who keep them in power, and then the police who we've put in power and we pay with our taxes.
The reason why these crimes go unwatched, unnoticed is because it's a lot of the reason is because it's like, well, if we point the blame at these sexual assaulters,
we have to point the blame in the House.
Exactly. The House, the Senate.
The sexual assault is coming from inside the House.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. So if we really lean into it, look at all the people that would have to go down by that law.
Well, I'm going to be quiet now because I'm mad.
So Mark Lutensky, by this time in 2019, he is a 50-year-old man who is very sick. For him, schizophrenia set in later in life. He had been a very successful chemist and a family man. He had a wife and kids and a life that seemed nearly perfect. Until his mental health took a turn for the worse. He was raised on a beef cattle farm. His dad was the local 4-H leader. And Mark grew up competing in farming and overall just general hard work. But in school, he was much more focused on academics than farm work. He graduated valedictorian in the class of 1987. He then went on to Central Michigan University, got a bachelor's degree in chemistry in 1991. He got a master's degree in physical and organic chemistry in 1995 at Iowa State University. He came back home with his degrees and got a job as a research chemist at Flint Inc., which I just have to pause and just say it was really kind of funny in his police interview. He was talking about his job at Flint Inc., and they were like, is this like some tattoo parlor? He's like, no, like computer ink, like I'm a chemist. But he was so like, I will have the interrogation videos linked. I think it's a 2-hour, 2+ hour interrogation video, and it is a lot. It's a lot. It's a whole lot. But
I'll be watching that.
Yeah, it's worth the watch because
I find it interesting.
It is really, he talks the majority of the time, and it's really hard for the police to like steer the conversation in the like keep it on track. Yeah. But it is a very interesting interrogation to watch. But yeah, I just found that funny. He met his wife Emily in his 30s. They were basically set up on a date by some friends. They went out for Chinese food, and she said that they had a very wonderful time. Emily said, quote, he was always a little bit awkward, but I liked him a lot. He was very considerate and kind. I fell in love with that side of him. He was very gentle. They dated for about a year before buying a house together, a cute stone cottage on beautiful acreage, the very house off Terrell Road, where police would later be called to. They were married in 2001, And by 2003, they had their first child, which was a son. And then she gave birth to daughters in 2004, 2007, and 2010. All four children, basically, one after the other, all in a row. Just like his family growing up, he had all kinds of farm animals for his children to both play with and help raise. They had rabbits and chickens and ducks and goats and horses. And just had a very overall extremely wholesome life as a family together. They did family stuff like they went on trips to amusement parks and theme parks. They went on as many family outings as possible. Emily said that it was a very busy but very loving life until after their last daughter was born. She said it was like night and day. She basically had a completely different husband. He started acting really erratic. He started getting really fixated on family lineage. He said that he didn't believe that he was his mother's son, but actually his mother's brother. He said that the reason his family lied to him about this was because of some sort of family inheritance that they were trying to keep him from, basically. And he said that he believed that there were people watching him, making sure that he didn't do or say anything wrong. Clearly showing some extreme symptoms here.
Yes.
Now, Emily urged him to seek treatment, clearly, and he did. In 2010 and 2012, he was diagnosed with major depressive disorder and paranoid schizophrenia disorder, and noted that he showed signs of having a further personality disorder. Mark was given medication, but rarely took it. Emily said that when he didn't take his medication, he'd watch horror films that were predominantly filled with violent torture scenes. Like, he got really fixated on the torture scenes.
See, and I won't watch those.
I don't watch a lot of films.
No, you don't. I
watch
know
documentaries.
We have a lot of horror film fans.
Yeah.
And I'm not besmirching you, your torture porn.
I don't
porn.
Hate horror films.
No, it's my favorite genre of film. Yeah. I just like the psychological paranormal ones. I don't like torture porn. I don't want to see, especially a woman brutalized for titillation. But I'm not going to judge somebody else if they do.
See, I tend to go more towards like psychological horror thrillers.
I like psychological.
Yeah, I don't really like the ghosties and stuff.
But I like the ghosties, but it needs to be done well, like Hereditary or something. Yeah.
But no, he was really, really fixated on these like violent, violent torture scenes. And he would talk to himself. He would stay out all night, and he quit showering and shaving. I do want to take a side note and just say that, as far as schizophrenia is concerned, these are all very typical symptoms of schizophrenia. Not necessarily like the violent parts of it, but the lack of sleep throughout the night and, just general changes in mood. I mean, obvious without the obvious, like hearing things, seeing things type of symptoms. But like, I know that we have listeners, I have friends that can have completely normal lives with schizophrenia, and that is totally okay. I don't want people to hear the term schizophrenia and immediately think, oh, serial killer, oh, violent person, oh, bad, you know? I don't know. I guess that's just a generalized overgeneralized, just kind of blanket statement there, because I don't know. I feel like because of cases like this, it gets stigmatized, and yeah, I don't want that to happen here. But as his delusion started to spiral out, as he quit taking his medication, he continued to kind of just spiral out of control. He threatened to get rid of his children's animals and even claimed that his son wasn't his. The marriage between Emily and Mark was basically disintegrated at this point. They tried couples counseling, but it didn't work. Mark's delusions grew, and he began accusing his wife of being in on the conspiracy to keep him from his supposed family trust. Now, everything ended up blowing up when Mark called CPS on Emily for alleged neglect charges that he just made up. So he also claimed that Emily and her brother were planning on murdering him by poisoning. Emily immediately took the children and left and ended up filing for divorce in May of 2012. Unfortunately, the courts granted Mark unsupervised visitation. And in 2013, he was supposed to drop off the children with Emily, but he never showed up. She frantically called police and found out that he had taken them to a water park and was refusing to give the children back. Mark was arrested on felony kidnapping charges, but they were dismissed in 2014 due to Mark being deemed mentally unfit to stand trial. His paranoia not only affected his marriage, but also his job as well. So side by side, the time that he's going through his divorce in 2012 until his arrest in 2014, his performance at work began to get worse and worse. His boss tried to be understanding. He tried to give him more and more chances to basically get his shit together, but his paranoid delusions were getting the best of him. He thought everyone now at work was out to get him. Eventually, after working as a chemist for 12 years, in February of 2019, he was fired from his job. In 2015, Mark had married his second spouse, a man named Jamie Arnold. Jamie Arnold later told MLive News, quote, "I knew something wasn't right, but I didn't know it was to that extreme. He was progressively saying stranger and stranger things, like the neighbors were polluting the water supply. They were all just really nonsensical. All I knew was I had to get out of this situation." The two separated in September of 2019, just a few months after he had gotten fired, and Jamie Arnold moved out of the house off of Tyrell Road. Now, Mark is now jobless, single, and the only one paying the bills. So he has to find a way to make money. He starts by finding odd jobs online. But those weren't really working out. It wasn't very lucrative. It did, however, lead him to online male escort services and eventually online dating. He went by many aliases. One, which was mainly on his online dating profiles, he went by the name of Wilk Olykus Vilkus, which translates. So Wilk is the Polish word for wolf. Olykus is the Greek word for wolf. And Vilkus means wolf.
Wolf.
In Lithuanian.
Wolf. You have three wolves inside you. Go to the doctor.
Choose one.
You should have zero wolves inside you. You're either a furry.
Get those wolves outside.
Into some fucked up shit. Or you've got some major biological issues going on.
I am concerned about
my name.
My
name is Wolf, Wolf, Wolf. God, did he wear a Three Wolf Moon shirt?
I'm assuming, but in all the pictures I saw, he was not wearing a shirt at all. So,
well, there you go. Why wear a shirt when you're a Three Wolf man?
Wolves don't wear shirts.
I'm injured, I've taken damage, and I shall recede.
So, he also went by the name Edgar Thomas Hill.
Well, that's fine. Why is it that and then the other thing?
Three names.
Let me tell you this right now. If you're walking around using all your names, all your good Christian names at the same time, and then reading like Catcher in the Rye, maybe go seek help ahead of time.
Well, and I don't, because I read one article and I don't know if they were joking or not. But it started out saying that essentially, I didn't quote it, but essentially that Wilk Olykus Vilkus was read his rights. Edgar Thomas Hill was sworn in, but what's his real name? Jesus Christ. Mark Lozinski. That's not it. I just don't have it written down. It's really hard to say. Lukinski. Latinsky. was actually charged for the crimes. Like, I don't know. Oh, like, okay, I get you know what saying. I mean?
Like, I was like, you have made this joke long and unfunny.
The names are hard to say. But no, like in the police interrogation, it was a long talk about what his name actually was. Like, he was really fixated. This was like his aliases were like a big fucking deal. Yeah. And part of his lore, I don't understand. But so Edgar Thomas Hill, he said, was his actual name in the interrogation. He said that he told them that his family had lied to him his whole life, that his name was actually Edgar Thomas Hill, part of the Thomas clan of Wales, which entitled him to an inheritance. He told them that Mark Latinsky was a boy's name stolen off of a child's headstone in a cemetery. That Mark Latinsky was not real. He was dead. And his parents just lied to him because he was actually his mother's brother and the final heir to the Thomas clan. And, like, he had this huge lore built up about who he really was, which was just not true. During a serious mental health episode in 2013, Mark introduced himself to police as William Gregory Dean, so yet another name. The police had found him pretending to be unconscious on his father's floor inside his father's house, which just happened to be right up the road on Terrell Road. Which it just, it's so creepy how all of the crimes today, or at least in this case, take place off this road. He told police that he had killed Mark Latinsky with the stroke of a pen. And I don't know. I don't know much about this whole William Gregory Dean, but it just seems like another person that he was trying to become. Mark was definitely not okay, clearly, obviously. He went to the mental, various different mental health facilities many times over the years, but no one really knew what he was doing online. No one knew what he was doing behind closed doors. Most people just thought that he was having, you know, these schizophrenic episodes, that this was, you know, all of his issues stemmed with this whole thing that he was fixated on with his family heritage. No one knew what was really going on, really. So as the months post-breakup, you know, Mark is jobless and all of this, he begins speaking to a man in July of 2019, a man named James Carlson. They start talking online. Their conversations were mostly on topics of role play and sexual fantasies. It is believed that James Carlson had... that all of the things that James Carlson was saying was strictly out of role play and fantasies. Okay.
Yeah.
And that Mark was taking everything literally.
Oh no.
Yes.
And you know, and I want to put this out here too.
I needed you too.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of role play.
Yes, you are.
It's fucking fun.
Yeah, you do.
I enjoy it.
You're into
it. I have been a role player for like over 20 years.
Yes.
I used to do it professionally. You may go, what the fuck? Dudes paid me to write naughty naughties back and forth. And that was fun. I will still do it to this day occasionally. Usually role play with my spouse now. And I'm not meaning all the time sexy role play. Sometimes it's just interesting. I just like writing with other people. It's fun. I like imagining things. So don't get judgy out there.
Right, right.
I'm sure the other person simply thought, we're consenting adults having a weird role play. It can get really kinky because it's just words. You can do all kinds of fucked up shit.
And that's the thing about like the BDSM community and like various like
tons of role
branches
play.
Of, you know, different sexual communities out there.
Lots of kink involves role play.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely. And so there's that kind of sense of vulnerability that people who are, you know, looking for these types of victims can immerse themselves in these types of communities and
pass it off as just, oh, I'm just role playing.
Exactly. Oh, we're just role playing. So it's just very dangerous.
And, you know, as somebody who role played professionally, like there's a strict line between in character and out of character for me. But trust, almost everybody try to blur it.
Well, and sexual fantasies, I don't know. We'll probably talk about it later whenever it's even more relevant, but sexual fantasies have a lot of guidelines, rules, you know.
We need rules.
Everything is laid out. The consent is there. You understand which parts are fantasies and which parts are meant to be physical and all of these things. So he was having fantasies about eating people, particularly being eaten. So apparently James Carlson was allegedly consenting to be eaten by Mark, who wrote in one Facebook message to him, quote, "I would need to make sure my technique was perfect, pain-free, and bloodless before I did you. I know that if a pig is afraid, the meat is tough and the blood must be let to have the meat that is tender." Many believe that James Carlson was strictly going to be, was just going with the fantasization of it all.
Yeah.
But Mark actually,
he believed it,
wanted this to be a reality.
Yes.
Allegedly, the room in the basement that these victims had found themselves chained in was a custom room built possibly specifically for James Carlson, but built for the reason of perfecting cannibalism. It had a 4-inch thick insulated door, tamper-resistant lights, a cage, restraints and chains, and a sliding barn door that hid its entrance. James Carlson, you know, very much believed that this room was specifically designed for him, but it is my belief, at least imagination gathered from this case, that James Carlson probably believed that this room was made for him, but as a sex dungeon for consensual intercourse, not for chopping up bodies and actually eating them. Apparently, James Carlson, now this is allegedly, but in a couple articles I did read, that James Carlson was one of the anonymous 911 calls. Which makes it more chilling to me.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Apparently, allegedly, he was the caller from October who, you know, was from New York, who ended up going back with him a few days later.
Yeah.
He allegedly told police after talking it over with Mark, he believed it was some form of, quote, sexual foreplay, and not actually a case of false imprisonment. It's likely that if he had not ran away to police and made a scene, had his face seen, all of that, that he could have and possibly would have been eaten that night instead of just being taken back for consensual sex and then let go. Which just chills me to the bone.
Yeah, it's horrifying.
But Mark would continue to try and try again until Christmas Eve, 2019. Mark texted James Carlson at 2:15 that next Christmas morning saying, quote, "I killed Kevin Bacon. Kevin Bacon is my, is it Heros? Heros? It's not heroes. Heros, I think. It's a Greek word meaning a cannibal's victim." He also sent a photo of food cooking on the skillet.
My God.
It's unclear if James knew that he was being serious or not, but he just simply replied, quote, "I hope you enjoy them. Can I see more pics of my room?" Now, Kevin Bacon, not to be confused with the actor, of course. Actually, his dad, his name was Carl Bacon, and he wanted his son to have the same initials without giving him the same name. And he actually didn't think about the actor Kevin Bacon until years later. He said that his son Kevin Bacon was bullied in school for his name, which just really fucking sucks. But Kevin Bacon was a 25-year-old queer hairstylist in the nearby town of Schwartz Creek. It was a small town with a population of 5,000 people. He was over 6 feet tall, a very big, gay, flamboyant, and beautiful man. He was naturally a natural fit as a receptionist at JCPenney and eventually worked his way up as a hairstylist. He always had different colored hair. He always carried a designer handbag, and he had a killer eye for fashion. He always had a smile and was prone to making people buckle over in laughter. But 2019 was a very hard year for Kevin. He was, after all, a very loudly gay man in a very rural town in Michigan. There was no dating scene there for him, much less any type of group of LGBTQIA plus people. There was just nowhere in that small community that he really fit in. He had tried his hand at college, getting accepted into Baker College first and then Eastern Michigan University, but he couldn't afford room and board there, so he had to drop out and went to cosmetology school instead. But doing hair, even though he loved it, it wasn't making him the money that he needed, you know, especially for the lifestyle that he wanted. During this time of frustration, his friends said that he disappeared for 9 days, telling his friends that he was going to the Upper Peninsula for work, but they didn't know what that work really entailed, what he was talking about. He came back home and said that he was tired of living in this rural town and that the gay scene was pretty much non-existent, which I get that. He eventually went back to school at the University of Michigan Flint, working for a short time in 2019 at the University Center for Gender and Sexuality. On the outside, things seemed to, you know, be looking up for Kevin. It seemed to be going in the direction that, you know, was going to make him happy. But on the inside, Kevin was in a great amount of pain. He struggled with depression and issues with body image. He would alternate between overeating and starving himself. According to his roommate in 2018, huge trigger warning ahead, after watching A Star Is Born, he became very fixated on the hanging scene, and the next day he overdosed on pills and had to get his stomach pumped. In November of 2019, about a month before his death, Kevin cut himself so many times that his roommate reported, quote, you couldn't see his skin. His roommate said that one thing that helped him overcome with his depression was online dating. She said, quote, Kevin's biggest thing was that he just always wanted to feel loved, and he never felt accepted by, you know, men and things like that. And she said, quote, I think that's probably why he was always on dating apps and, you know, Tinder and stuff like that. His friends said that he was attracted to toxic men. His friends said that the majority of the men that he dated were aggressive and psychologically abusive, and that he dated men that were broken in order to fix them, which I understand completely. As a broken person, as a person who feels broken, it feels good to help other people. And that's just the kind of person that he was. After doing his sister's and his mother's hair on Christmas Eve, he came home and he told his roommate that his mother and his sister had told them that a certain person that he was not interested in seeing was going to be at family dinner that Christmas Eve. He was very upset by this. And so he did not want to go to Christmas Eve dinner. Instead, he was going to blow off steam by hooking up with someone. It didn't take long for him to meet Mark on Grindr and strike up a conversation. Kevin told him that he wanted to be with multiple men, strangers, tied up, and that he wanted to completely lose control. Mark simply said, "I can make that happen." Before we get into his specific requests, I just kind of want to take a step aside and just say that this is part of healing for people,
mm-hmm.
for myself, for many people out there. I know many listeners are going to understand this.
Yes.
That having a consensual loss of control.
Yeah, I love that shit.
Especially in, you know, the sexual department, mm-hmm. it heals that part of you that was taken advantage of.
It did.
Or that part of you that you can't control.
It feels like, for me, mm-hmm. like a safe way to kind of almost re-experience yes. the trauma and yes. come to terms with it.
Yes.
With someone who loves me and cares about me.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave me my power back.
Yes.
Because I am ultimately in control yes. of the situation and yes. decide what happens to me.
Yes.
And it did give me that power back. And the first time I engaged in that kind of play, it was so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I cried.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that pain
right.
and that humiliation leave me.
Yes.
And I felt like I got myself back.
Yes.
So I get that people don't understand consensual non-consent.
Yes. 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 And honestly, if you don't understand.
You don't need to.
Exactly.
I don't need you to understand. Exactly. But I do need you to shut the fuck up.
Well, and to understand why people need this.
It's not sick.
It's not sick. It is, it's healing.
Y'all, I'm going to tell you this, and maybe it will shock you, and maybe it won't. The number one fantasy for women
mm-hmm.
is consensual non-consent.
Yes. And it's because of the trauma.
Yes. But it helps you. And you know what? Hey, you can be into it and never experience that trauma. It can still make you feel powerful, and yeah. it can still be healing for you in other ways. Or not even healing. Yeah. It's just titillating, and you fucking like it.
It's funny. It's not funny, but it's just interesting how I personally can't understand that because of my point of view on the opposite side of the spectrum. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but yeah. I just, because I know that so many people, especially in the articles and especially listening to some of the you know, people talking about this case, a lot of people cannot understand what I'm about to say that he wanted. And I can only understand this person. And I just, when you see his picture, he looks like our friends. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I know that person,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I really care about that person. And I see that person in a lot of us.
Yeah.
So,
And here's the thing, like, you guys can judge me all day. I don't really give a shit. I'm a strong person. Mm-hmm. I have bucked against judgments my mm-hmm. entire life, but I just won't allow it in a discussion in this space.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there are people that are fragile and will be hurt by these judgments.
Absolutely.
So keep them to yourself.
Yeah. I'll be hurt.
You don't have to understand something mm-hmm. to keep your mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they talked through a consensual plan to induce Kevin's fear response during this act, which is exactly what Kevin was requesting. Mark told him that he would be blindfolded, stripped of his clothing, and quote-unquote delivered to five men. Once it was all over, he would be returned. Kevin asked, quote, just one question. You are going to keep me safe, right? To which Mark answered, quote, I will show you how I'm going to transport you and let you determine if I am trustworthy. Which, just, yeah. Kevin then replied, hopping in the shower, I'll be ready. He left his house around 5 p.m. telling his roommate goodbye, and he met up with Mark Latensky in the parking lot of a shopping plaza. Mark pulled out a bag of fetish items for Kevin to choose from. He later told police, quote, he looked at the Y harness, but it wasn't the right size. He put on earmuffs and blinders because he was going to an auction as part of the fantasy, and he put on the leather wrist and ankle straps. Other than that, Kevin was naked. The deal was that Mark was going to take all of his clothing, his personal belongings, and leave it in Kevin's car, transport him in his car so that all of his things were safe for when he was later dropped off. before Kevin's phone was locked away in his car. At 6:12 p.m., Kevin texted his friend, quote, "I'm going to be out for a while, actually. This is going to be fun. He's inviting more men. Merry Dickmas. I'm not sure when I'll be back. Probably will be out late. So if mom calls you, I'm sleeping. Ha ha ha." But then he didn't show up for Christmas breakfast that next morning at his parents' house. And everyone knew that something was wrong. His family called police, and soon his car was located in the parking lot where he had left it, with all of his clothes and belongings inside. The family put up flyers all over town. They organized search parties, and they spoke to reporters while police worked with the evidence that they had. They knew Kevin had gone on a date with someone he had met online. They were able to access his cell phone and found the conversation between Kevin and quote-unquote Wilk Olykus Vilkus, who they were very easily able to identify as Mark Latinsky. They also had an anonymous tip via social media who wrote in saying, quote, "I have an idea. There's a guy routinely on this app. He keeps having guys escape from his basement. The cops keep not pressing charges because the guys who escape admit that they went in consensually." They then sent police a screenshot from Mark's account with his profile photo. Police arrived at Mark Latinsky's house on the night of December 27th. He answered the door wearing a leather kilt. He remained calm, and he allowed the officers to search his home. They found the sliding door to the secret room in the basement, inside which they found the following. Trigger warning, of course.
Yeah.
They found Kevin Bacon's body, lifeless, strung up, and his private parts removed. Mark later admitted to planning on using Kevin's blood and bones to fertilize the plants in his garden on his property, his muscles he was planning on using for jerky, and that he had removed his testicles, fried, and ate them. The case against Mark Latinsky. Sorry, I just had to choke that back. Okay. The case against Mark Latinsky was a long and exhausting investigation, mostly because Mark's mental health. He pled not guilty eventually. He at first pled not guilty due to reason of insanity. And in January of 2020, the courts found him not competent to stand trial. Basically, they kept him in a mental health facility and kind of revisited his case every few months until they found him able to stand trial, essentially. In October later that year, 2020, they reversed their decision and began trial proceedings. By 2022, he finally pled guilty on charges of open murder, which I don't think I've ever come across a case involving charges of open murder.
Yeah, that's a strange charge.
I had to look it up, because I hadn't seen it often enough.
I think I've seen it once, but I don't remember what it was.
It's a combination of first and second degree.
Gotcha.
Which I just find interesting. That
I also don't get it.
Yeah.
Hurt my brain.
Yeah,
me
don't
too,
know why it's
dumb.
Called open murder, but as well as the disinterment and mutilation of a dead body. Mark Latinsky was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. During the sentencing, Kevin's mother, Pamela, wrote a statement addressed to Mark for the victim's advocate to read to the court, saying, quote, "In your sick, twisted mind, you probably don't think you did anything wrong. But in reality, you took our world away. This Christmas, I hope you suffer like we have, because you won't be able to be with your family. I hope you feel pain as much as you are all alone with all the years yet to come." After the sentencing, Pamela spoke out saying that her son was a kind and generous person. Quote, "He would want everyone to move on or to move forward and do what they had to do for their goals and their dreams. And I'm going to say it like my daughter said it, quote, please be careful on the internet because you never know what's going to happen. And I kind of just want to leave it at that.
Yeah.
Just keep these people in mind when you are online.
I know, I'm not wanting y'all to be paranoid and scared.
No, and I know that there's not a whole lot that could have been done in this case.
No.
There just are sick people out there mm-hmm. that will cause harm if they are not treated.
Again, we go right back to the mental health institutions in this country are fucking gross and not helpful.
Right.
This shouldn't have happened because this was a person struggling and suffering.
Right. So I never want to look at a true crime case and think, you know, okay, well, this is what could have done. This is what could have happened.
Oh,
this
no,
is what
we should don't. Have happened. We don't play those games. You know? If you all have been listening for any length of time, yeah. we ain't playing.
Yeah.
What's these hypotheticals going to do?
Exactly.
Yeah, I've listened to some true crime episodes where they're like, they'll have like an ad for Ring Cam, and then come on, well, if she had a Ring Cam.
That's disgusting.
And you know what? Blow chunks. That none of that shit. That'll violent. Be the last time I listen to that motherfucker.
Right. And you know, the idea of like, well, you know, if he would have done this, if he would have, you know, I mean, even at the beginning when, you know, I said that, you know, if more people were to tell their friends and loved ones, I mean, yes, do, but I don't want it to be
well, he deserved to die because he didn't do these steps.
Yes, or those people, you know, deserved to, because we don't know if there was any other victims.
No,
you know, he was very systematic with mm-hmm. his you know, seeking victims and everything like that. I mean, it was literally one after the other, month after month. We don't know about people in between.
No.
So what I mean by that is, you know, there's no blame on them, but just remember that because these people went through this, that there are people out there that could harm and could, you know, harm you. They could hurt you.
Yes.
And we want you to be as safe as possible. So, just reach out to your loved ones, mm-hmm. reach out to people and, you know, grow your community. Like, you know, if you are in the BDSM community or you are in situations like this, have more people in that community that you can reach out to. I don't know.
Absolutely.
You know, we love you. We care about you. And
be safe.
Yeah.
Be safe while you play.
Absolutely. And have fun. Have fun.
Have fun. Also, no shame.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now it's business time, but I'm not going to be long with this one. If you're a Cruelty Party member, hey, y'all, you're getting two episodes this week.
Yeager.
Yeah, girl.
That's gender fluid. Girl is gender fluid.
Well, some people don't like that.
I know.
So I say, well, hey, y'all.
The way that I spell it in my mind is it's like dude.
Yeah, some people don't like that either.
I know.
Yeah.
And I understand it.
Yes, I do.
But yeah, I just like to clarify when I say it.
Indeed. Anyway, that's kind of all I got. Mm-hmm. I'll leave our link tree there if you want merch. Yep. Our coffee is there. Because, hey, send us a little love.
Yep.
This shit's hard to talk about sometimes.
It really is.
It
really
dredges some shit up for me sometimes.
I'm also covering on Patreon the Brian Cohey case. That one's really rough to talk about too. And it's between this case and that case, there's a lot of interrogation videos to watch, a lot of mental health to study and mm-hmm. question and all of that. Yeah. So
I'll be covering, if you're wanting to get in like as a Cruelty Party member and listens to these episodes, I am covering a case about a man who discovered a cave and bad stuff happened.
I hate caves. I mean, I love caves, but I don't like the
claustrophobia. Yep. This is real mm-hmm. bad on that. Mm-hmm. Just a heads up. Mm-hmm. Anyway, other than that, if all you can do to support this podcast is listen, well, thank you very much.
Appreciate you.
I do appreciate you greatly. Mm-hmm. And if you're on YouTube, thumbs up, notification bell, subscribe, and leave a mm-hmm. comment. And you could say, Lillian, mm-hmm. I love you. And I'll say, I love you too, even
join
if I don't know you and I'm going to make it weird.
Yeah, join our Discord.
Join our Discord. Come say hi. Mm-hmm. But most of all, stay safe. Goodbye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Us on your social media platform of choice. Linktree/cruelty has all of the links. Check out our Patreon for exclusive episodes, merch, ad-free episodes, live ghost hunts, and much more. Please be sure to subscribe. New episodes are uploaded weekly. Thank you so much. See you next time. Music and production by Lee.